Hello, everyone. I'm Dave Kieran, and I have here with me the lovely Galari Farhadian.
Thank you, Dave. If you're joining us today for the first time, Dave and I are educators, entrepreneurs, and the host of Innovation Fuel podcast. By the way, if you cannot pronounce my name is Galari Farhadian. That's a better one, right?
Very good. Thank you very much.
Innovation Fuel is brought to you by University of Canada West as Innovative Business and Technology University. It is a business podcast with new episodes every 2 weeks.
Galari and I will bring you real stories with local BC owners as guests. If you would like to know more about us or you would like to be a guest, come visit us at www.ukenwest.ca/innovationfuel.
At University of Canada West, we believe that our students are the future of Canada. Yes, Dave?
Yes, you nailed it, Galari. We arm them with the tools and bring real life stories into the classroom, which they can take with them as they embark on their journeys to become the leaders of tomorrow.
Innovation Fuel is our way of sharing these stories with you.
Galari, are you ready?
Oh, I'm so ready, Dave. Let's go.
Without further ado, let's ignite this episode of Innovation Fuel. Our guest today is one of our best current students at UCLW. Wow, that's quite the title. And we are not just saying that because we can get some free coffees here. I'd like to know about more about that.
Our guest today is Shiryas Kotha, also known as Mr. Bean around UCW. Mr. Bean is actually the name of his business, which is founded last year during his MBA at UCW. Wow, good.
Well, I got to say, I love the creativity in the name here. I'm going to have to ask a lot of questions around Mr. Bean. Shiryas, welcome to our virtual studio. How are you doing today?
Hey, Dave. Thanks a lot for having me. And thanks, Galari.
So tell us more, first off, because, you know, curious, our listeners are curious probably to understand more about why you get this name of Mr. Bean.
Thanks. That's a question I get asked quite a lot, actually. And when my wife and I were pondering on names that would be fitting for our coffee business, Mr. Bean kind of stood out because of the double meaning. I mean, of course, there's the coffee bean, and then there's the celebrity Mr. Bean. And I've always liked Rowan Atkinson's comedy because of his universality of it. You know, because there are no words, there are people all over the world who are enjoying his comedy, right? So it's not limited geographically. And it's also, of course, an excellent conversation starter. But one of the things that I didn't expect was everyone would start calling me Mr. Bean, which is perfectly fine. I actually enjoy it. It's a nice name to have around, which is associated with my business.
So, Shiryas, tell us more about this coffee business. What is this coffee business? How did this come to fruition?
So the business, in essence, is not necessarily coffee vending machines, but fully automated specialty espresso machines. Now, all of these systems are manufactured in Italy. So I work with a partner here in Canada who essentially imports these machines from Italy. And then I am the area operator exclusively for downtown Vancouver. I was pretty happy to get that exclusive territory because it is a prime piece of real estate in essence, and a great market that I plan to eventually conquer.
Oh, sounds very interesting. So this takes me back to wondering a little bit more about you and your journey through to become an entrepreneur. So tell us a little bit, why coffee and why this opportunity? And tell us a little bit more about your journey towards being an entrepreneur. Is this the first entrepreneurship venture you've taken on?
That's a great question. Actually, entrepreneurship is a journey that I've been going through, and it's been evolving in my personal life ever since I did my undergraduate degree at Babson College in Boston, Massachusetts. Babson's actually ranked pretty highly for entrepreneurship in the world. And ever since that education, I've kind of fostered the principle of entrepreneurship. And one of the definitions of entrepreneurship that I enjoy and I like is entrepreneurship is an obsession with opportunity. And I think I've kind of imbibed that into my life. And to answer your question, actually, no, this is not the first entrepreneurial venture which I have done. I've done a couple more, two in India, one in the US, and this is the first one here in Canada. One of the companies that I invested in India is called Food Street. And what Food Street does essentially is it sets up cloud kitchens in micro markets. So as food delivery was exploding all over the world, a gap in the market was micro markets far away from town centers and downtown regions. So outside Bangalore, there were huge universities, right? And no restaurants catering to them in terms of delivery. So what Food Street would do was set up a kitchen, low rent, low cost, low expense, and deliver all kinds of foods to that micro market exclusively. I thought that business had a lot of potential. So I invested in that and it's still going strong, slowly growing, a lot of experimentation going on in that company. Another company which I've invested in the US is called Terra Revo Equities. That's actually a very established company. My uncle kind of encouraged me to experiment and try that out. And that's real estate development and construction. So in essence, what we did was we got a bunch of investors together. We purchased a piece of land, reconstructed the home, which was there, a very old property, in essence, flipped it. And we wanted to sell it in March this year, but then of course COVID hit and the markets took a dive. So we ended up renting it out for a year. And then hopefully when the markets recover, we'd be selling that property. And when it comes to Mr. Bean, I decided when I would come and do my MBA. So the MBA has been like a long-standing milestone. I wanted to actually complete my undergrad, work for 2 years and then get my MBA. But then it's been 7 years that I was working in my family business, which is into jewelry retail. And I said, if I procrastinate any longer with my MBA, I'm probably not going to end up doing it. So I kind of just jumped into, the MBA at UCW. And one of the things I told myself was that I'm not going to give up any idea or any opportunity that comes through. I'm just going to jump at it, jump into the water, and then eventually learn how to swim. And one of the reasons that I actually wanted to start the business while doing my MBA, not after completing my MBA, is because I get access to a very valuable resource, which is my professors and the entire UCW community, who've actually been instrumental and extremely helpful in giving me their two bits of information, advice, information, suggestions on how to better the business. And here we are.
Exciting. Well, we're glad to have you here, and we're excited to learn more about Mr. Bean for sure, because it is here local in our market. And so tell us a little bit more, how did you come to Mr. Bean? Like, where did you find the gap? How did you know that there was this particular gap in the market?
Sure. So I think a month after arriving in Canada, I signed up for a lot of information for the Business Network, Franchise Expos, and I managed to visit the Vancouver Franchise Expo, which took part in April. And that's where I kind of partnered with this company. And I met this very interesting company called Java Brew Collection. And I thought their business model seemed pretty interesting because, in essence, it gives me the freedom to run the business however I want. So it's not a franchise. I can have my own name. I don't pay any franchise fees. I don't pay any royalties, no revenue share, no profit share. I just have to purchase my machines from my partner. I have that exclusive territory. So I liked the freedom that this business gave me. And I also liked the pitch. Now, the part of the pitch which kind of attracted me was that coffee is the most consumed beverage in the world. And in some cases, the most purchased beverage in the world as well, because water is usually free. The next best thing, even before Coke or Pepsi or any of these soft drinks, is actually coffee. So that was a big part of the pitch that kind of definitely attracted me. And I also liked the business model. where I invest into an asset, a machine that I put to work. So then my job is to get maximum capacity utilization.
Okay, Shiryaz, would you explain your customers and who are your customers mostly and why are they buying from you?
Sure, absolutely. That's a great question. So UCW has been extremely helpful. In fact, my first machine that I set up was in the student lounge on the second floor of the West Bender campus. And that was very good learning for me because I got to understand the different tastes that people have. I got to understand what people thought about the price. I got to understand basically that community at UCW and the students at UCW. So I would say a large portion of my market currently would be students. Eventually I grew. I've got a few machine, a few of my machines in office buildings. I had one machine in a gymnasium. And that's another story, actually, thanks to COVID, that gym ended up getting evicted. So those are some of the challenges that I faced during this period. But it's eventually growing. It's not limited to only universities or only offices. It's basically anywhere that can use coffee.
So how do you go and find those customers? Like you said, yeah, UCW was a great starting point, and you now leverage that into other businesses. How do you go and find these customers? Let's talk about this prior to our COVID element. Like, how did you go and find customers?
Well, to be honest, it was good old-fashioned prospecting. I would actually go from street to street, from building to building. You know, wherever there's a no soliciting sign outside, I would actually just walk into that building and, you know, ask to speak to the operations manager or administration department. And most of the time, people would kind of, you know, turn me away. They would say, you're going to have to book an appointment. You can't walk in. And it's fine. I mean, I'm used to sales and I know that we're going to have to go through that grind. But eventually, a lot of people are open-minded. A lot of people were open to the ideas. So they allowed me to do a free installation, you know. So I have a free sampling where I set up one of my machines in the offices and let them try it out. And usually once people taste it, they don't want me to remove it from their office. And the reason my brand and my machines and my coffee actually stands out compared to the competition is because these are not only specialty espresso, but the machines actually are calibrated to conform with the Italian Espresso Institute. So I didn't even know there was an Italian Espresso Institute until I got into this business. But there are specific standards in terms of the percolation time, the temperature, the quantity of different ingredients, how much they have to be mixed in order to create the perfect beverage. And I tasted so many different variants, so many different machines that exist in the market, a lot of American-made machines, a lot of German-made machines. But this was the only one which was Italian-made, and it was really creamy in the flavor, and it wasn't watery. And I really liked the fact that every cup would have freshly ground beans, so it's not the powder, but it's actual coffee beans that are freshly ground. And I have the ability to change the beans. So I've experimented with Ethiopian beans, with Costa Rican beans, with I'm trying to even get in the beans from a region in India called Coorg, which is also the part of the country where my wife is from. And they own coffee estates back home in India. So she's my official taste sampler because she's got a very good sense of taste and smell. So she knows when it's a good coffee and a bad coffee.
Okay, so you're saying that the customer is coming to you because not only because of the machine, because also the quality of the coffee beans. Am I right?
Absolutely. I think any business that I get into, it's the product that's central. No matter how great the business model, no matter how good the margins are, no matter how seamless it might be, if the coffee doesn't taste good, people are not going to buy it. They're going to step out and pay a premium to go to Starbucks or a Tim Hortons. And that was the main thing that I looked for when I decided to jump into this business, is I had to make sure that the coffee tasted good.
So how you build your relationship and grow your relationship with the customers, because I think it's a long-term relationship with the customer, right? Because you're selling machine and pods as well.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I did a lot of experimentation, actually. In fact, I would spend a lot of time in that student lounge, actually watching people, seeing how many of them liked it, how many of them didn't like it. And I didn't want people just to tell me, because they know me, that it tastes good. I wanted honest opinions. So I spoke to a lot of people and they told me what they liked. They told me what they didn't like. They told me to add in variants. For instance, a French vanilla with espresso shot was a suggestion from one of the students. I added that in. One of the students said, you know, replace the decaf with something else. So I actually got a hazelnut flavor and I added that in. And yeah, I actually kind of enjoy changing it, tasting it, playing around and seeing what people like or don't like.
That's fantastic. So do you have, are you keep changing your menu or not? No, right now it's a fixed menu.
No, I do actually. I do change it as and when I can. For instance, one of the most popular beverages in my machine in the UCW student lounge is actually chai tea. Because we have a huge population of Indian students, I figured let's add in a chai option and a chai variant. And that's actually one of the most popular ones along with French vanilla. There's also a hot chocolate, and then you can even mix them together. You can have a hot chocolate with espresso or a mocha or a French vanilla with espresso or a hazelnut with espresso. So there's pretty much a lot of freedom in how I can configure the machines, and I take advantage of that.
So coming back to these machines, okay, so we've got this machine element. I'm just going to try and clear this up for our audience because it seems like you've got a two-sided model here where you have the machines as one element, getting that into the with the customer. And then you're going in, you're then offering product to that customer. And you're adapting the product. Now, the product seems like it comes from a different partner. Can you tell us a little bit more about that connectivity of the two-sided model that you're running here?
Well, in essence, yes, I can source my supplies from wherever I'd like. I do get them in wholesale. I do have it with the existing partner with whom I partner with the machines from. And I've tried pretty much a lot of different sources and options of variants of ingredients. And then once I find that perfect balance for that market, I let it be. I don't change it too often from there, unless, you know, I get a lot of requests. So all of my machines have my phone number and my contact information on it. So I encourage people to actually contact me with any feedback that they might have.
I have a question about the costs. So what is your main cost? I'm not looking for the number. Just tell me what's your main cost is.
Yeah, well, so there are two parts, right? Now, one is the capital cost, which is the investment into the machine itself, and that's a large portion of it. And then there's the operational cost, which is the supplies, the milk powder, the coffee beans, the French vanilla, the hot chocolate, all of these other ingredients that go in. One of the things that I do like and I'd love to share with people is I definitely would advise never going out to buy a cup of coffee. Because the margins in coffee, the cost to create a cup of coffee is so low, but the price paid outside I've seen is so high, which is why I've tried to keep my costs and I pass that margin and that cost benefit along to my customers. So all of my cups of coffee at least for instance, at the University of Canada West, I try to keep it under $1. Of course, some specialty espresso products would probably be $1.25 when the equivalent is sold in $2, $3, sometimes even $4 at Starbucks Reserve, right? And I've actually done blind taste tests, and it's comparable. So a lot of the students find that benefit to take advantage of a low-cost, good-tasting cup of quality coffee.
That is fantastic. So you sell coffee machines again and coffee pods that you make it by yourself.
Well, actually, I'd like to correct you there. So the business model is where I don't sell the machines. I own the machines, but I just deploy them at my customers' venues. So that's part of my pitch as well, is there's no cost for UCW. So even UCW brought me in, the gym brought me in, a few offices brought me in. Absolutely no cost, absolutely no compulsions. If they don't want the machine, they call me, I take it out. So the machine belongs to me, but I sell the cups of coffee on different models. For instance, there is a vending model where the customer pays for it. There's also a model where I charge my client on a monthly basis based on actual consumption. And there's a tiered rate system. The higher the consumption, the lower the cost. So I'm actually experimenting a lot with those pricing models. There's no limitation. So far, I'm using these two, though.
So you're saying you're almost leasing these coffee machines to these businesses?
Well, I don't actually charge like a monthly rental for the machine either. There's absolutely no cost for the machine. It's only for the consumption. So it's a no-brainer. If someone has room for the machine, bring in the coffee.
What about the maintenance of the machine?
So that's my job, right? So I visit all of my machines on a weekly and a monthly basis to replenish the stocks, do my routine servicing. And that actually ends up taking a couple hours a week of my time, which is kind of why this is a great passive business, because it allows me the time to focus on other ventures or a full-time job, as well as my MBA. I mean, right now I'm actually doing three things. I'm doing my MBA, I'm working part-time at Coast Capital, and I'm kind of developing Mr. Bean.
That is fantastic. Do you have competitors? I'm not talking about this big chain store like Starbucks. I'm just saying that you have other competitors that can, it's same as your business model?
Yes, absolutely. It's not an industry that is a blue ocean. It is an industry that does have a significant amount of competition, but not too much. For instance, back home in India, I've seen bloody red oceans. There are so many players in the industry that it's very difficult to compete. But I've noticed in Vancouver, there aren't too many options. And there are so many offices that actually don't have a proper coffee system inside their office. They're either surviving on kettles or, you know, those K-cups, those pods, which are horrible for the environment because all of those pods are made out of plastic. Mr. Bean is zero waste to landfill. It's all organic waste. There's no waste that's produced that's harmful for the environment. But for instance, the largest player in the market is this company called Van Hoot. Van Hoot's a large player in the industry, and their machines are comparable. I would say the taste varies. I would say the price varies, but that's why I always offer a free tasting. You know, I just allow people to taste it, and I don't want to sell my machine. I don't want to sell my coffee. I just want the opportunity to exhibit it.
That is fantastic. So how do you introduce yourself to the market? I mean, what is your strategy?
Well, if you're asking what's my pitch when I walk into an office and I want to get my coffee machine in there, essentially I ask them, what are you currently offering your employees, your staff, and your community in terms of coffee and hot beverages, right? Now, if they already have another machine, a fully automated espresso dispensing system, then I try not to push too hard, because I don't want to take away from someone else's businesses. There might be a contract in there. And I'm thinking, if I was in that position, I wouldn't want someone to do that to my client. So I kind of go to people that don't have something already in their office that fills the space. And then I just offer a free trial. And usually once I'm able to get that free trial, my machine stays. Unless, of course, there's something unexpected like COVID, which kind of forces businesses to reconsider their models.
So you would say your value is in not the per se, the machine delivers the value, but the value comes from the product offering.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a bit of both. One is the price has to be reasonable because there is a cost to it. And that's where I'm very flexible on that. I try and offer pricing that, that office can afford. I've even in some cases turned down customers. So while I was prospecting at this, what was it? It was a healthcare company. And there was a customer in line behind me. They overheard me and they gave me their card and said, you know, we're actually looking for a coffee solution in our office. Why don't you come and give us a visit? So I met them. I saw their office, And it didn't work out because they had, I think, 5 employees. It was a very small office. Great business model, though. But this is not the kind of machine that's required for that office because this is a large-scale machine. It requires a lot more volume. So usually, if an office has 10 or more employees, then they could consider one of my machines.
So what is your next step? So after post-COVID-19?
Great question. Great question. I actually was hoping I would be at 10 machines right now. By the time I complete my MBA, I'm at 7 machines right now. And because of COVID, I actually lost 2 contracts. So one was this gym, which unfortunately, like the entire health and fitness industry took a huge hit. You know, even Steve Nash closed. The gym I had my machine in closed. They were enjoying it. Everyone really liked the coffee. So I actually have 2 extra machines, which I need to deploy. Once I've gotten those off my hands, then I could get back onto the prospecting and development. And I want to do justice to my territory, right? So I have downtown Vancouver. I want to make sure that I have addressed every office in downtown Vancouver, and whoever needs it can have the opportunity to have my coffee machines, a Mr. Bean inside their office. And then your question is probably going to be what next, right? So either scale up, either increase the size of my territory, or also probably even sell the business, right? I would have created a brand. I would have created, value and equity in a company and eventually probably even sell. But to be honest, I'm open. I would be very happy to have suggestions. If you have any good tips, good ideas, I'm still in a very early stage of my life, very early stage of my business. So it's very fluid right now.
Have you heard about shared offices?
Yep, co-working spaces are absolutely
shared offices. I think it's a good idea to approach them as well.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I have spoken to a couple of co-working spaces. I try to network as much as I can. So I've actually joined a meetup called Startup Vancouver. And that's where I meet a lot of interesting people, a lot of interesting businesses and owners and people in great positions in these companies as well. And I met 2 people who have a co-working space. I did manage to give them a card. I did manage to let them know about my company. They seem to be very interested, but again, this was at the time of end of February. So a lot of the physical meetings kind of stopped and it kind of stalled. I would say the progress kind of stalled until the market revives a little bit.
So saying this, COVID-19's come along. Now, how do you change your go-to-market model? How do you change that element? You can't walk into the office spaces anymore. So what kind of strategies do you have now thinking, okay, I still need to build this model. I still need to get these 2 machines out there. What do you do?
So actually, one thing that I did was I just went on a Google and I typed software companies in Vancouver. I typed web design companies in Vancouver. I typed financial companies in Vancouver, and I got a whole bunch of hits, right? So I kind of go industry by industry, and I get the contacts and the numbers, and I actually started shooting emails out to all of them, right? Because I'm not able to go physically and actually speak to someone. And I figured hoping that emails would work, but they didn't. I had a response rate of 1 person replying saying, we'd love to, look into this after, COVID kind of eases down. So I feel like a lot of companies are financially strapped for cash. So they're not kind of entertaining prospects like this. But that's not going to stop me. I'm going to keep going. I'm going to keep trying. I think referrals are a very strong way. For instance, a lot of people have actually suggested and given me contact, said, why don't you contact them? So I'm going to work on that.
Well, and the other thing to start think about is that, how do you, because of these people not being able to get to their offices, So there's not going to be a lot of people in these offices. Is there other places that you could go that there's still a large contingency, like supermarkets or grocery stores that have like, employees in the grocery stores? They, you know, might be interested in, you know, looking at other opportunities that where there's still a large concentration of employees still coming to a place.
Yeah, that's a great idea, Dave. I think I actually did work on this idea at one point in the past where I kind of walked into my grocery store, but they already had their own coffee, which they were promoting, and their own, K-cups, those pods. And that's when I was kind of asking them, would you be interested in an upgrade? Well, just because that one didn't work out does not mean all grocery stores are off. Thanks for that reminder. I'm definitely going to pursue that option. And I'll give you a commission as well, Dave.
No, we don't need the commission. We just need to see our students succeed, my friend.
Exactly.
Thank you. Exactly. Yeah.
So, Shiryas, I think that's all. This was very good to having you here.
If you would like to know more about Shiryas and Mr. Bean, please visit MrBeanYPB.com. If you would like to continue to the conversation with Galari, Shiryas, and myself, tweet us using the hashtags #UCWInnovate or #FuelMeUCW. Galari, what do we have up next?
You know, Dave, this is always a surprise for you. Next time is another surprise. So we want to listen to hear about your success stories, your journey to be entrepreneur in the Bay Sea. So please come if you are entrepreneur and you want to share your stories with us. We'd love to hear you. And if you need any help as entrepreneur, small businesses, we have lots of students can give you help and you can use them as well. It's a win-win situation for both of them.
Yes, yes. We want to get those students out sharing their knowledge. We have all this great knowledge that they have in this background. Let's get them out there helping you during these times of COVID and helping you business. Thank you very much, Shiryas, for your time today. It was a great meeting you and learning about Mr. Bean. Again, Galari, always a pleasure. Thank you very much. Have a wonderful night. See you next time.